Our next guest is a familiar voice for public radio listeners. You know Peter Sagal as the host of NPR's popular quiz show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. What you might not know about him is that he's also an avid runner, having completed 14 marathons across the United States, a lot of 5 and 10Ks, and a lot of jogs around the neighborhood, too.
In a new book, he reflects on how running helped him through the darkest period of his life, as well as some of the other lessons he learned over the course of thousands of miles on the run.
Peter Sagal is the author of The Incomplete Book of Running. He joins us from the studios of WBEZ in Chicago. Peter, welcome back to the show.
It's a pleasure to be back with you guys. How are you?
Well, really good. Now, you started running in your teen years, but you say it wasn't until later, around age 40, that you turned from someone who runs into a runner. What was the difference there?
The difference is it's when you're older, when you're approaching middle age, it's much easier to imagine that you are going to die,
okay,
frankly, which is more of an abstract thought at the age of 15. But when I turned 40, this was some years ago, it became more and more concrete. And I decided, in the way that a lot of people do, I think this is a fairly typical thing as people get toward middle age, man and woman, to say, I better do something. I better get out there. I better have more experiences and prove that I'm still alive. So I decided to run a marathon, which I did. But what is less typical, I think, is what I did, much to my surprise, which is that I finished that first marathon in 2005. And I said to myself, I wonder if I can do that faster. And that started a journey that, brought me here.
Now, you like running, and for someone like me who's not a runner, I don't quite get it. I'll be honest with you. Explain the appeal.
Well, let me ask you a question. When's the last time you tried running?
Oh, man. I mean, I walk fast sometimes, but running, you know, to catch a bus maybe.
Right,
but,
of course.
Like a 100-yard dash, and that's about it.
When you were, did you run, for example, in, say, high school gym? Did your gym teacher make you run laps? No.
Nope,
so you
nope.
can't even... You can't even remember the last time you tried it.
Right, exactly. You got me.
Okay, but you don't like it.
I didn't. Okay, I see where you're going. Don't knock it until I've tried it again.
There's a green eggs and ham here, that you know, happening here, which is that a lot of people, and I think this has to do, frankly, with the situation of our age, as Samuel Johnson might say. As you say, the only time when you might have to run in the life that we live now is when you need to catch a bus or perhaps somebody stole your bag. The fact of the matter is that we, a lot of us, imagine that we don't like to run because we never run. And so it becomes abstract, like, you know, I don't like getting repeatedly punched in the face either. That doesn't happen to me, but I assume it would be bad. And I think that a lot of people in your situation, if they were to try it, to actually go out and run a few blocks, it probably wouldn't be immediately joyful, but it wouldn't be as awful as you might think. And here's the key. If you keep it up, if you get over that initial hump of being out of shape and not used to it, and you keep at it, you don't have to do a lot. You'd be surprised at how quickly, A, you get good at it, and B, it becomes actually enjoyable. For me at this point, it's essential. I can't go, I mean, this is my second day in a row when I speak to you today on Friday without running, and if I don't go running at least by tomorrow, I'll start to go mad.
Now, one thing that really did appeal to me as you talk about running is you write about when you're in different places, different cities. You use running in part as a way to get out of, you know, the hotel district, the part of town that looks like every other town in the United States, and get out and explore the uniqueness of a community.
Exactly right. And, you know, I've had wonderful runs in Madison. I've had wonderful runs in Milwaukee. And, like, I'll give you an example. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me routinely goes up to Milwaukee to do a show every now and then. And if I didn't get up in the morning of our show and go for a run, I never would probably leave the two blocks between our hotel and the Riverside Theater. And that goes for all the cities we travel to. And that is, I think, it's not just a shame, it's kind of a tragedy. There's a lot of stuff going on out there, and sometimes the best way to find out where you are is to go out and run around in it.
Talking to Peter Sagal from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. His new book is called The Incomplete Book of Running. You also talk about, and this appeals to me too, the community of runners, the fellowship, a group of people who, you know, you don't care what you look like when you're out and running with these people in a marathon or informally.
Yeah, it's true. And I've run all over the country with all kinds of people, probably, you know, hundreds of thousands, not hundreds of thousands, hundreds, maybe thousands. And it's always great. And this has a little bit to do with the fact that we're all doing the same thing, or as I say in the book, we're all going in the same direction, so it's pretty easy to get along. It's also because the people you meet running, you're not going to spend a tremendous amount of time with them. You're going to go for a run, and then you're all going to say goodbye and go home. One of the great things about running is we all know we've all heard about the fellowship of sport, right? You know, team spirit. And sometimes when, you know, if you're not an athletic person like myself, that seems like something wonderful yet inaccessible, you know? I mean, I'm never going to be a championship athlete in baseball or anything else. But for those of us who are like me, the threshold for running is so, I guess, low. It's so easy to get into that you can participate in that kind of community of effort, that sort of athletic fraternity or sorority, I guess. And it's just as wonderful as it looks like when you're watching, you know, the Green Bay Packers celebrate. It's just the same, even though, of course, you don't get the live television coverage.
As we mentioned, you write about how running has, in part, helped you get through a dark time in your life, a divorce, kids involved in that divorce. How has running, at least in part, helped you cope with that?
It's something I didn't really understand until I got to the end of it. Because as I'm sure many of the listeners who have experienced this know, when you go through something like this, you find you're totally unprepared, right? All of a sudden, your marriage is breaking up. All of a sudden, you're going to become a divorced dad, which is not anything I ever imagined I ever would be, let alone wanted to be. And you find yourself very unprepared. It's very disorienting. But in the course of writing this book and then talking about it afterwards, one of the things I've realized is that even though at the time when I went through these experiences, I felt completely overwhelmed, it turns out I had been, in a way, preparing for it or training for it through long-distance running, because running gives you, among other things, cardiovascular benefits, lost weight, whatever. It gives you what I call the practice of persistence. I mean, distance running is what we call an endurance sport, like cycling or swimming, and we mean that literally. You have to endure it. It's not as painful as it sounds, but there is endurance involved, and as you practice it, you become better at enduring things. You become better at understanding that anything you're in the middle of, no matter how difficult it seems, you can get to the end of it, that it's going to end. It's not a permanent condition. I mean, a marathon seems really, really long. It's 26 miles, but it's not an infinite number of miles. It will be over. And I discovered that the practice of that prepared me in a way that ended up being very, very valuable for getting through much more difficult and complex things than a simple road race.
NPR listeners may remember you had run the Boston Marathon. You were about, by your best estimate, 100 yards away from the bombs going off. You tell the story in the book, and that's a through line in the book. I don't want to spoil too much of that. I wanted to ask, though, you went back and ran the Boston Marathon again. What was that like? What was that like for you after that?
It was a collective act of defiance. Shortly after the bombing, I was contacted by a reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times and asked me about it. And, you know, I had been there. And I was asked if I had any message for the bombers, who at that point no one knew who they were. They hadn't been caught yet. And what I said was couldn't be printed in the Chicago Sun-Times and can't be repeated on public radio. But everybody coming back to run the marathon again in 2014 was expressing that unspeakable sentiment to not just the bombers, who by that time had been killed and caught respectively, but to anyone who had even thought for a moment that this crime, this tragedy, would affect our sport. Our event, the Boston Marathon, as people might know, is sort of the crown jewel of the annual racing season. It's what we call the amateurs' Olympics. You know, it's a difficult thing to get into, but it can be done by almost anybody with enough training and dedication. And we just weren't going to let I'll put it in a Wisconsinish way, the sons of guns to take it away from us. And it was an exciting and kind of an important day for everybody in the community.
I don't want people to come away thinking this is all serious stuff here. Can you tell us a little bit about the time that and the time you ran a race in your underwear in the middle of winter?
Yeah, it was weird. You know, one of the things that happens with running is people say, well, running's kind of boring, and they're not entirely wrong. So out there in the world, there are a lot of people who are coming up with ways to add levels of interest. There are zombie runs where people who are dressed as zombies trace you. There are survival runs where you have to go through literally fire. This is called the Cupid Undies Run, which is a fundraiser for the Children's Tumor Foundation. And what they require you to do is run just a mile, but do it in your underwear, preferably red, On Valentine's Day, which, as you may know, is in the winter. So, yeah. So, I mean, a lot of people end up doing rather silly things they didn't anticipate once they get divorced. In my case, I found myself running down the streets of St. Louis in my underwear. There are photos of this on the internet, and I do not encourage anyone to look them up.
Peter, 30 seconds or so, get me running. Get the non-runners running.
You need to get outside. Our lives are lived sitting in chairs, in cars, in offices, staring at things or listening to things. That is not how we were designed or how we evolved to live. And the act of running, which is something that everyone, to coin a phrase, was born to do, is a way to get back to the person who you were supposed to be. And it's accessible to anyone. Just go outside.
Peter, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you so much.
Peter Sagal is the host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. We've been talking about his new book, The Incomplete Book of Running.